You're listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. Welcome to today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for March 26, 2024. I'm Morgan Neuhauser from Drake University. Here is our first story. Iowa West Foundation, $3.7 million to boost Southwest Iowa. Then there's a photo of a little boy in a monster hoodie. Smiling at the camera, and the caption reads, "A child smiles for the camera at the Annie Nelson Early Learning Center during a tour of the Council Bluffs facility on Tuesday, September 14th, 2023. The center was built using a public-private funding model. Similarly, the Iowa West Foundation is continuing its investment in preschool programs throughout the Green Hills Area Education Agency serving Southwest Iowa students. Preschool, Bridge Study Among Several Major Grant Awards by Scott Stewart at the Nonpareil. The Iowa West Foundation is continuing significant underwriting of the Green Hills Area Education Agency's preschool program. More than $18 million has been invested in four-year-old preschool programs through the Green Hills AEA by the foundation since 2008. And another $1.35 million was just announced as part of the first grant cycle of 2024. The Iowa Department of Education recently found Pottawatomie County ranks number one in Iowa for kindergartners' early literacy skills, reflecting considerable growth over the past 5 years, the Iowa West Foundation noted in a news release crediting the accessibility of high-quality preschool programming moving the needle. The results speak volumes about what an investment in our younger residents can do for our community, Brendan Maywarney, the foundation president and CEO, said in the release. When Southwest Iowa kids are better prepared for kindergarten, it sets them up for academic success. Improved literacy outcomes are linked with an increased likelihood of high school graduation and future success after graduation. Early childhood education has also been a focus for Council Bluffs schools, and early literacy has been a priority for Iowa schools for years. Pottawatomie County kids are setting the standard for our state, Maywarney said. We are thrilled that our dollars are making a real difference in families' lives. Jason Blotti, chief administrator of the Green Hill AEA, said that attending full-day preschool has an undeniable benefit for students. Longitudinal studies and data have shown consistently that full-day preschool is undeniably beneficial for all students, and even more so for our most vulnerable students. Lord said in the Iowa West release, "We at the Green Hills AEA are grateful for this partnership with the IWF and our local schools and proud of the work we are doing together, educational investing." Iowa West will also have Avenue Scholars of Southwest Iowa expand further into Pottawatomie County, bringing more opportunities for career mentorship, internships, and vocational training. The organization seeks to provide stability through financial literacy programs and scholarships to boost financial stability, as well as mental health services, counseling, and community engagement initiatives to boost life stability. Another $95,000 will go to the Council Bluffs Boys and Girls Club, which provides services to 21 area schools with more than 120 members, in addition to other programs aiming to provide a safe, stable environment for young people in the community to become the leaders of tomorrow. Removing barriers. Iowa West said that supporting opportunities open to all area residents is a priority for its funding awards. By removing barriers and offering on-ramps to achievement, more residents can succeed within their community, the release states. The foundation is giving $100,000 to Bridges Out of Poverty for its Southwest Iowa Poverty Alleviation Initiative and $75,000 to prevent evictions through Iowa Legal Aid. This grant from the Iowa West Foundation significantly impacts individuals and families facing poverty in Council Bluffs and Southwest Iowa by providing essential resources and support. Marcos Bell, CEO of Bridges Out of Poverty, said in the Iowa West release, the grant will boost the numbers of graduates from the Bridges program, which Bell said provides skills to break out of the cycle of poverty and strive towards stability and self-sufficiency. This investment is crucial for fostering resilience and economic mobility within the community, creating a ripple effect of positive changes for the generations to come, Bell said, fostering inclusivity. Glenwood and Denison residents will have better accessibility in local playgrounds thanks to Iowa West funding. Glenwood's Highley Park project received $40,000, while Denison's Washington Park received $55,000 to build all-inclusive playgrounds, according to the foundation. Those improved facilities will allow children of all abilities to enjoy the community parks. The Iowa West grant for Highley Park and Glenwood will have a transformative impact, particularly by addressing accessibility concerns, which ensures that all members of our community can fully enjoy the park's amenities. Chad Lang, president of the Kiwanis Club, leading the project, said in the Iowa West release, the grant not only enhances inclusivity, but also demonstrates a commitment to equitable access to recreational spaces, making it a vital investment for our community's well-being and cohesion, Lang said. Sustainability program. Investment from the Iowa West Foundation will continue critical programs in the community. Harlan Family Services is receiving $330,000 in support for operations, while Potawatomi Arts, Culture, and Entertainment is receiving $200,000 for building operations. The United Way of the Midlands is collecting $250,000 for its community care fund, which direct dollars to where they needed most in the Omaha Council Bluffs metropolitan area. Meanwhile, Central Latino is getting $75,000 and Lutheran Family Services is getting $45,000, both to sustain their operation. Boosting projects. Neighborhood Work Home Solutions, which revitalizes neighborhoods with housing, has $259,650 earmarked for the second phase of its Hillside Estates Townhomes project. The Rapp Park Councilor Trail in Page County will also receive $150,000 in contributions. Exploring opportunities. A grant of $275,000 is designated for the multi-model bridge study underway by the City of Council Bluffs in coordination with the Metropolitan Area Planning Agency. Iowa West and MAPA are splitting the cost of the study, which is exploring whether a bridge across the Missouri River is feasible to support the expansion of Omaha Streetcar under development to link to downtown Council Bluffs along the First Avenue corridor. Brandon Garrett, Chief of Staff for the City of Council Bluffs, said the project could be transformative to the future growth of Council Bluffs. No decision has been made about bringing the streetcar to Council Bluffs, and construction would not start for years. The city is moving forward with a planning and environmental linkage study, which has been necessary for securing future federal funding. Inquiries sought. Iowa West is funded through fees from gambling and Ambistar, Harrah's and Horseshoes casinos in Council Bluffs, as well as income from the foundation's investments. The foundation serves 14 counties in southwest Iowa. Letters of inquiry, the first step in the grant application process, are accepted year-round. The deadline for the next cycle of funding is May 1st. Applications are due May 15th. Applications will need to create a giving data account on the Iowa West Foundation website to access the letter and application process. Grant application workshop will be held on April 3rd in Council Bluffs. Find more information at iowawestfoundation.org. Our next story is Tourism Officials Earn 3 Awards by Scott Stewart. The slopes of the lowest hills don't necessarily come to mind when contemplating skiing destinations. Potawatomi County tourism officials are working to change that perception, highlighting Mount Crescent Ski Area to winter sports fans and tourists alike, and the work is earning accolades. The Iowa Tourism Office recognized Potawatomi County and the Council Bluffs Convention and Visitors Bureau with 3 Iowa Tourism Awards last week, according to a news release. Mount Crescent was recognized with the Outstanding Attraction Award during the Iowa Tourism Conference in Des Moines last Friday. The award acknowledged Potawatomi County's efforts to transform the once languishing ski area with a ski resort's revenue delivering a 25% return on investment in the 2022-2023 season, while also covering its operating costs. The Crescent destination brought in a 15% to 20% increase in business from a year ago based on anecdotal reports. The Council of Loves Convention and Visitors Bureau was recognized with the Outstanding Marketing Collaboration Award for its involvement with the 2023 Omaha Metropolitan Area Tourism Award, and its partners, Visit Omaha and Sharpley County Tourism, shared the recognition. The trio of tourism authorities have worked together since 2017. To present the local awards for best attraction, hotel, restaurant, and retail business in Potawatomi, Douglas and Sarpe counties in the metropolitan area. State officials also recognize the Council of Sparrow with the Outstanding Niche Market Initiative Award for its 2023 Winter Marketing Initiative. This award celebrates the Rio's first winter digital marketing efforts and its results, which surpassed its goals for page views, clicks, and impressions. Mount Crescent was featured among the primary reasons to visit the county during the winter season. The Outstanding Attraction Award is to credit the Potawatomi County Board of Supervisors and the Iowa West Foundation for having the vision to see the potential of Mount Crescent. Mark Schumacher, Executive Director of the Potawatomi Conservation and President of the CBCVB Board of Directors, said in a release. This award, coupled with the two for the Council Bluffs CVB, illustrates the quality of the tourism efforts in Potawatomi County. Tourists spent a total of $329.62 million in direct spending in 2022, according to the release, which is the fifth highest in Iowa's 99 counties, surpassed by the counties containing Des Moines, Davenport, Cedar Rapids, and Iowa City. In terms of total tourism spending, voting for this year's Omaha Metropolitan Area Tourism Awards continues through Sunday. The Potawatomi County nominees are Best Hotel, County Inn & Suites, Hampton Inn, and Amistar Hilton Garden Inn, Holiday Inn Suites & South, at Amistar and Spring Hill Suites. Best Restaurant, The Buck Snorton Mule, Dewdrop Inn, Midden Bowl Cage, Nesting Grounds, and Pizza King. Best Attraction, Historic Squirrel Cage Jail, Hoff Family Arts and Culture Center, Mount Crescent Ski Area, Phoenix Movie Theater, and Prairie Crossing Vineyard and Winery. And Best Retail Business, Anytime Cheese, Bev's Porch, The Olive Branch, the Unique Boutique, Iowa, and White Ivory Apparel. Winners in each county will be recognized during National Travel and Tourism Week, which starts May 19th. Vote at omatourismawards.com. Our next article is incumbents to get past primary. Council Bluffs incumbents in both parties face tough re-election fights to return to the Iowa legislature, but they'll get a pass in the June primary contest. Senator Dan Dawson, Republican Council Bluffs, will square off against Council Bluffs City Council member Steve Gorman, a Democrat, in the general election for Senate District 10. Neither is being challenged by another candidate for their party. The district is one where Democrats have potential to flip. Republicans hold a 2,220 active registered voter advantage with 6,076 active independent registered voters. Democrats also hope to hold on to House District 20, where Republican Josh Turek of Council Bluffs won elections in 2022 by a razor-thin margin of 6 voters. Turek faces no Democratic primary challenger, but will watch the outcome of a Republican primary contest between August Gibbons and James Wolesko, both of Council Bluffs who are competing to run against Turek in the general election. Representative Brent Segrest, Republican Council Bluffs, will face Democratic Roger Peterson of Council Bluffs, the organizer of Common Sense Power Networking event. Outside of Council Bluffs area, incumbents won't have anything to worry about during the primary election either, but they will have challengers in November. Senator Jason Schultz, a Republican Schleswig, drew no primary challengers and no Democrat filed for Senate District 6. Libertarian David M. Davis of Harlton is running for the seat, but the The district only has 154 active Libertarian registered voters. Senator Mark Costello, Republican Imogen, will face Democrat Ryan Lerone Ronfield of Glenwood in Senate District 8. Democrat Benjamin Schor of Dunlap will contest Republican Representative Matt Winslow, Republican Missouri Valley, who serves as the Iowa House Majority Leader and represents House District 15. Representative David Siak, a Republican Glenwood, will face Democratic Candela Foley Finchman of Glenwood in the general elections for House District 16. Republican Craig Stephen Williams of Manning and Democrat Jeff Rich of Gidden will compete in the general elections to replace Representative Brian Best, a Glidden Republican who isn't seeking re-election in House District 11. While the deadline for counting candidates passed Friday, the Pottawatomie County's auditor's office was still awaiting certification of the primary candidates list Monday afternoon. This list will be publicized once certified. From the Digest, nominations close soon for a Lincoln Teachers Award. The 2024 Charles E. Lincoln Outstanding Teacher Award nomination opened through Friday. The public is encouraged to nominate educators who encourage and inspire students to learn. Each winner will receive $10,000 with an additional $2,500 given to their school. The award recognizes teachers within a 40-mile radius of Emerson, the hometown of the late philanthropist Charles Lincoln. Council Bluffs and Lewis Central teachers aren't eligible. Educators in those districts are recognized by the Excellence in Teaching Awards from the Nelson Family Foundation. Nominations for this year's Nelson's Awards are closed. Nominate teachers for the Larkin Award at tinyurl.com/LarkinAwards24. Our next story is officials urge severe weather prep. There's a photo of a tornado by Joe Shero. And the caption goes, a rope tornado, which has reported to have touched down in the vicinity of Lake Manawani, is visible since St. Albert Catholic School on August 4th, 2016. This is written by Tim Woolwear. Spring can be pretty with flowers and trees in bloom, birds chirping, and children once playing outdoors without heavy coats. But warming temperatures can have a harsh, ugly side, the potential for severe weather. This week is Severe Weather Awareness Week across Iowa. State and local emergency management officials agree on its important message. It's a good time to focus on severe weather and to come up with a preparedness plan, or if they have one, review it, said Gabriel Barney, Deputy Director of Planning and Operations for the Pottawatomie County Emergency Management Agency. Severe weather happens here, said John Benson, director of the Iowa Department of Homeland Securing and Emergency Management. We frequently see tornadoes, flooding, straight-line winds, and even derechos, Benson said. So take the time now to prepare yourself and your family so you know what to do if severe weather is heading your way. Travis Hitchcock, director of Mills County EMA, offered three suggestions echoed by others. Build a kit, make a plan, be prepared, he said. It does help. A properly supplied emergency kit should include non-perishable foods for several days, plus water, flashlights, first aid kits, extra batteries, a weather radio, and toiletries, emergency officials said. Throughout this week, state and county emergency management agencies, as well as the National Weather Service, are providing information on preparedness on social media sites. Each day, a particular type of severe weather will be focused on these sites. Tuesday's theme will be tornado safety. Wednesday will share general severe weather preparedness tips. On Thursday, we'll focus on hail and wind safety. Friday's message is flood safety. As part of this week's focus on emergency sirens, will go off on Wednesday at 10 a.m. all over the state. Schools, businesses, healthcare facilities, state and local governments, and individuals are strongly encouraged to participate in the drill by practicing the actions they would take if an actual tornado warning for their area was issued. Though many area schools are out this week for spring break, Council Bluffs Community Schools Chief Communications Officer Diane Ostrotowski said, "We have several drills every year, mostly on sheltering," Ostrotowski told the nonpareil. "We require our schools to conduct drills every year." Folks should also become part of the statewide alert system, Hitchcock said. They should sign up for Alert Iowa, the state's emergency notification system, he said. This system allows people to indicate what types of alert they want, be it weather, traffic, emergency, or more. They can also request being notified by text, email, or voice message. To sign up, visit pcema.ia.org/alert-iowa or your county DMA website. You can also text 67283 with your county name followed by IA, such as Mills IA. Alerts can also be enabled by downloading the Smart 911 app. Our next story is Public Invited to Learn About Preservation by Tim Rohrer. Council Bluffs has several groups devoted to historic preservation, working to keep the community's history intact and help celebrate its legacy. On Saturday, the public can learn more about the organizations during the historic preservation celebration at the Council Bluffs Public Library. The whole point is to help inform the public about what historic preservation is and how these different groups contribute to historic preservation, said Troy Stolp, a devoted supporter of preserving the rich history of this area. Stolp is not only a board member on Preserve Council Bluffs, but also a commissioner on the Council Bluffs Historic Preservation Commission and the main person putting together this first ever event involving the city's historical preservation organizations. Between 9 and 11 groups are expected to attend, Stolp said. Among the others are the Pawtucket County Historical Society, Union Pacific, and various neighborhood associations. Hopefully we can inform the public and get them involved, Stolp said. Representatives will have tables so community members can meet the groups, and they will be 30-minute in-depth presentations followed by a question-and-answer session. The event, which runs 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., will also be a chance for business owners to get advice on regulations for preserving historic buildings, Stolp said. We want to make it easier for them, he said. It is a much easier process than what people think. Next story is training series for RagBrai riders available. Registration is open for the 48-mile bike ride. Registration is open for the Iowa Bicycle Coalition ride series to help Iowa cyclists prepare for the RAGBRAI. The Pigtail Rides, Bacon Rides, the Big Rove Rides are hosted by the Coalition on some of Iowa's favorite trails in May and June, according to a news release. The family-friendly events include food, drinks, and fun for the entire biking community. Pigtail Rides, a women-specific 48-mile bike ride, will be Saturday, May 18th and cover Ankeny's Prairie Trail and the High Trestle Trail. Baccoon Ride, a 71-mile ride of the Raccoon River Valley Trail, will be Saturday, June 15th and features bacon treats along the ride. Big Rove Ride, a 36-mile ride on Saturday, June 29th, has dual start at Big Grove Brewery in Iowa City and Cedar Rapids. It cruises along the Iowa River Corridor Trail, including a stop at the brewery's local in Saloon. Ticket prices increase after this week. Registration at iowabicyclecoalition.org. This year's RAGBRAI will kick off in Glenwood. First leg, Glenwood to Red Oak, is Sunday, July 21st. RAGBRAI will be here before you know it, RAGBRAI Ride Director Matt Phillips said. You're listening to the Council of Buffs Daily Pond Nonpareil for March 26, 2024. On IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and Print Disabled in Des Moines. I'm Morgan Neuhauser from Drake University. IRIS volunteers love to hear from listeners. If you have any comments or questions about this or any IRIS program, please call toll-free from anywhere in Iowa at 515-243-6833. Our next article is Dawson Talks Taxes on Iowa Prep with Scott Stewart. A Council Bluffs state senator shared his perspectives as the chair of Iowa Senate Ways and Means Committee in the most recent episode of Iowa Press from Iowa Public Television. Republican Senator Dan Dawson believes there will be action on income tax reductions this session, but there are other issues related to the budget that will come first. We say from day one, taxes does not drive the budget. The budget drives taxes, Dawson says. There's certainly opportunity to do something, but we talk about bigger and bolder things, to do. To be very frank, the longer it takes for us to get some of these issues resolved, the window does close in some of these opportunities. A tax cut in 2022 will continue to lower income taxes over the next 2 years, and money will remain in the taxpayer relief fund if lawmakers don't take action this year, Dawson said. The fund is a one-time opportunity that needs to be used the right way, Dawson said. He said there are two perspectives, a one-time check, which is essentially what the governor's proposal would do, and trying to lower taxes on an ongoing basis. Dawson was joined by Representative Jane Jacobsy, a Coralville Democrat who is a ranking member on the Iowa House Tax Writing Committee. The episode can be streamed at iowapbs.org/iowapress. Committee OK Syntax on THC CBD Products by Robin Upsell. As lawmakers consider restrictions on hemp-derived THC and CBD products, the Senate Ways and Means Committee passed a measure last week that would add a syntax to consumable hemp products. Senate Files 2417 would set a 25% excise tax on the sales price of consumable hemp products, with the tax revenue going to the state's general fund. Senator Dan Dawson, Republican Council Bluffs, said as hemp-derived products become available and rise in popularity in Iowa, the bill is a regulatory measure to address the tax disparity between retailers of hemp products versus alcohol. While alcohol products like beer and liquor are subject to specific taxes and regulations through the state's Alcohol Beverage Division, Dawson said hemp products are currently only subject to the state sales tax. I don't think we have our heads wrapped around how this industry is currently expanding, Dawson said. As opposed to sending these products through the state ABD, it makes more sense at this point in time to equalize that tax disparity and have an excise tax. The bill was amended to narrow the focus on intoxicating products and address specific concerns brought up during the bills in subcommittee meeting. Dawson said that there may be additional changes coming. The bill passed 11-6 with Democrats voting against the measure. Senator Bill Dawson, Democrat of Waterloo, said that the amendments approved in the committee were positive, but that they still have concerns about the legislation. I really do know that these low levels of THC and the Delta products with that are nowhere near intoxicating as alcohol is, Dalton said. And so that's something to take a look at a little bit further. But I think you're on the right track about fairness and taxing and those kinds of things. Senator Adrian Digley, Republican of Patwood, said he supported the bill because he believed there should be tax fairness for competitors to THC products, largely alcohol, that he had concerns about supporting any bills involving THC until the federal government changes its regulation on the legality of THC products. Essentially, if you're an employer and you have to follow the federal guidelines when it comes to drug testing, if your employee drank a 6-pack or a 12-pack of this Ignite before and then got called in for a random drug test, they could very well test positive, Dickley said. I will support this because of the taxation issue, because really not supporting the bill doesn't fix the issue either of these products being sold and available to Iowans that still are subject to federal drug testing rules. Separate bills would regulate products. Another bill, House File 2605, is also available for discussion in the Senate. The bill proposes capping consumer hemp products to a maximum of 4 milligrams of THC per serving, with a maximum of 10 milligrams per container. The bill also sets the age requirement to buy hemp products at 21, requires warning labels, and establishes new restrictions and penalties related to the sale, possession, and manufacturing for such goods. The companion to the House bill was approved by a Senate committee and was placed on the unfinished business calendar. Dawson said questions about the legality of the drugs and concerns about federal versus state legality on THC consumption will be further discussed and addressed through the regulation bill. He added that he believed the consumable hemp product industry needed to start taking some dramatic responsibility for products available. Nevertheless, this bill here right now is only just trying to equalize for something that we can't ban. It appears at least trying to equalize tax disparities for a high-profit industry that certainly there's some risk related to, Dawson said. Next, we're moving to the opinion section. And first one is by Steve Breen, hardened hearts and short-sightedness at the Iowa Capitol. Republicans in the Iowa House hate government freebies, unless it's their corporate friends who get them. The latest evidence of this hypocrisy is the effort to kill a Central Iowa program and prevent others like it that are aimed at helping poor people. Uplift is a test program in Central Iowa that gives $500 per month to 110 individuals who live with at least one dependent up to the age of 25 and who have a median household income of only $24,000 a year. The program is partially funded by using federal funds awarded to the city of Des Moines and Urbandale, and it's part of a broader effort to study the impact of providing unconditional cash to needy families in order to help them build financial security. These kinds of guaranteed income experiments are being targeted by conservatives across the country, according to a Wall Street Journal article this week. Earlier this month, the Iowa House voted mostly along party lines, 55-43, to choke off public funding for Uplift and any program like it. The bill would require existing programs to end January 1st, 2025. The Uplift program is scheduled to run through April of that year. State Representative Steve Halt, the Dentured Republican who floor managed the bill, raised several objections, but mostly his critique centered on the allegation these programs would kill Iowa's work ethic and make Iowans dependent on the government. Apparently, these kinds of concerns don't apply to Iowa corporations. The state tax code is littered with handouts for Iowa business and corporations. Just look at the Research Activities Tax Credit, which is aimed at fostering research in the state. Over the past 14 years, Iowa has extended subsidiaries to the tune of more than $800 million to companies from just this one provision, much of it going to big corporations like Deere & Co. and Rockwell Collins, according to Common Good Iowa, which has targeted the tax break for years. What's more, a big chunk of this money is going to companies that don't own any state income tax. In 2023, for example, $35 million, or 42% of the overall annual total, went to businesses that didn't owe any state income tax, Common Good Iowa says, citing a state report. It's notable that for years, while most states maintained this kind of a research tax credit, Iowa was one of the minority of states that fully extended it to companies that don't owe state taxes. The legislation narrowed this handout as part of a larger bill a couple of years ago to lower corporate and individual income tax rates, but it didn't eliminate it. Americans tend to cringe at the idea of government freebies, and since the days of Ronald Reagan, right-wingers have been pretty good at turning people against trying to use government funds to help people who are in need. But that doesn't stop lawmakers in both parties from using federal and state tax codes to help corporations that don't need the help. It's one of the things that irritate Americans the most about taxes, at least at the federal level. What's more, it's not clear that Iowa's research and development tax break is doing us much good. Still, there's a general belief that the capital is worth the cost, so it continues. However, when a local government in Iowa wants to use non-state dollars to help families, two-thirds of which are employed, according to House Democrats, and who only make a third of the median household income, State House Republicans stand in the way. Also, programs like these are just the beginning, that they're laying the groundwork for a guaranteed income program at all levels, and that they're counterproductive. But let's be serious. This country will never support an Andrew Yang-style universal income program of $1,000 a month. It won't happen. However, some of these programs just might provide some valuable lessons for how to get families out of poverty to put them on the road to success. There have been a number of studies about these types of income programs, yet it's still no recent study centered on Iowa. What are they afraid we might learn? Besides, we know Iowa's poor need help, and getting people out of poverty serves a valuable public purpose. 1 in 6 Iowans weren't even making enough money to meet their basic needs in 2022, an increase from the year before, according to a new study by Common Good Iowa. We also know the state's unemployment rate is historically low. The idea that this kind of program will kill our state's work ethic is ludicrous. A $500 monthly stipend won't discourage anybody from taking a job. It's not enough money, but it might help a single mother pay for rising child care expenses that the legislator has done next to nothing to limit. And it might help some Iowans pay the bills while being forced to stay home to care for disabled relatives because the state makes people with disabilities wait for years to qualify for a Medicaid waiver to pay for basic care. And it just may help an Iowan pay for a car repair so that they can get to their job. Republican legislators in the House don't want Iowans to get this kind of help. But they're happy to give a big tax break to some corporations that next quarter will report hundreds of million dollars in profits, but they won't pay a dime in state income taxes. That's not fair. The next article is titled March Madness As We Know It Faces Extinction by Adam Minter. The NCAA's men's basketball tournament, which began last week, won't be the only college basketball competition worth watching this year. 2 weeks ago, organizers of a new tournament planned for the fall at the MGA Arena in Las Vegas indicated they'd offer each participating school up to $2 million in NIL money that must be distributed to current athletes. The players' Era tournament, as it's known, isn't competing against March Madness, not yet at least, but as college athletes undergoes seismic money-driven challenges, it's one model for the future. Others intended to further enrich schools, athletic conferences, and media partners are also emerging. The consequences are stark. By next season, March Madness could look very different. Within a decade, it could be obsolete. Fans now settling into their sofas to watch some great basketball should enjoy this year's tournament as if it's the last dance. The NCAA's first March Madness dance began in 1939. Since then, the organization has steadily grown its men's basketball tournament and the money earned by it. As of 2023, more than 80% of the NCAA's revenue comes from this tournament. The NCAA pays out much of the money, roughly 2 million units, to athletic conferences based on each team they qualify and each win they earn. It adds up. The SEC took in $34 million worth of units last year. But the process of getting in is where the problems start and what has long inspired discussion about alternatives to March Madness. Currently, 32 teams automatically qualify for the tournament by winning their conference tournaments. Most of the automatic qualifiers are from smaller leagues, and competitive teams from bigger conferences often don't make the tournament. For example, the Big East, a longtime basketball power conference, the three of its 20-win teams failed to qualify for the tournament. In response, the Big East has loudly complained about the NCAA selection process, and it's not alone. On Wednesday, legendary Michigan State coach Tom Izzo, whose team qualified for this year's tournament, pointed notably that he wasn't sure the process was good for the game. Potential solutions are on the table. Last year, the NCAA proposed expanding the men's basketball tournament to as many as 90 teams. It didn't specify who would get these slots and how the money would be distributed. But change in the tournament structure is imminent. The Athletic recently reported that the tournament will likely expand to 72 or 76 teams as soon as next year. That's unlikely to be a happy outcome for college basketball traditionalists. Among other problems, it may dilute the quality of play while marginalizing the importance of the regular season. That leaves the biggest conference with a different and arguably better possibility. Why not start their own postseason competition independent of the NCAA? There's ample precedent that it could work. The college football playoffs is owned and operated by 10 athletic conferences, plus the University of Notre Dame. CFP, not the NCAA, decide who participates and how the money is divided. It recently completed a new 6-year agreement with ESPN that will pay it $1.3 billion annually. It's not just the schools and conferences that can potentially benefit from the influx of money. NCAA rules do not prevent networks and other CFP sponsors from offering athletes name, image, and likeness payments. A new spring basketball tournament looking for the edge over the NCAA could be the trailblazer. The outcomes would be a different kind of event that better reflects the money-driven evolution of college athletics. It may not have the same form as the current March Madness, but the basketball matchups will be superior, and that's the kind of madness every fan should enjoy. The next article is Large Animal Vets in Demand by Jeff Durang. Madison DeFinger knew she wanted a career working with animals while growing up on a farm near Eldon in southeast Iowa. We have a small We had a small cow-calf operation along with row crops, she says. That really sparked my interest in veterinary medicine. DeFinger graduated from Iowa State University's College of Veterinary Medicine in 2023 and started working at the Stott Veterinary Clinic in Stott, Iowa. Prior to entering vet school, DeFinger received her bachelor's degree in biology and animal sciences at Iowa State. I visited a lot of clinics around the Midwest, and it was really cool to see how they were all somehow different, she says. The clinic in Stott really matched what I wanted in a practice. It's been a great opportunity. While DeFinger works with animals of all sizes, most of her emphasis at Iowa State came with large animals, especially hogs. The vet schools encourage students to recognize the opportunities out there for large animal veterinarians, says Justin Brown, assistant professor of swine production medicine at ISU. There is still definitely a shortage of vets working with food animals, he says. We also see a shortage out in the rural areas. A lot of residents do not have access to a local veterinarian. Brown says Iowa State uses an all-around approach to help train veterinarians. Not only are they well-versed in production medicine, but they understood the role of a veterinarian in their local community. There is a lot of value to having a veterinarian in a small community, he says. For the most part, veterinarians are pretty active members of their communities, and we want our students to realize that, Brown says. There are several programs offering incentives to students looking to pursue a career in veterinary medicine. He says ISU will work with students interested in these programs to find a fit for them. They can include being a part of the Army Veteran Corps, where the Army pays for vet school in exchange for several years of service. Brown says other universities offer similar incentives and programs. USDA offers some loan forgiveness programs in exchange for practicing in a certain area, Brown says. Adding the USDA is usually looking to hire veterinarians for food safety and other purposes. DeFinger says that she appreciates the opportunity she has and encourages anyone interested in a career in veterinary medicine to talk to veterinarians and visit practices to see what they have to offer. Iowa State did a really good job of preparing us and to help us out when we needed it, she says. DeFinger says she is enjoying working in Stewart and enjoys meeting new people. They have been very welcoming here, she says. I'm happy that I can work with both large and small animals. I enjoy the variety. Midland's Humane Society, know the truth when adopting a shelter pet. Maria Garcia. There is hardly anything more exciting than waking up in the morning knowing that today is the day you will be rescuing a new companion from your local shelter or rescue. Walking through the kennels with all eyes on you can be a joyous but bittersweet moment as you realize you can't rescue them all. But meeting with a new pet and creating an instant bond is an incredible feeling that can't be replicated. When you finally arrive home and introduce your new furry friend to this new environment, you may find that the experience isn't exactly perfect. They may hide under some furniture, pace the room in an anxious manner, or even take the inopportune moment to relieve themselves. It isn't uncommon for thoughts to run through a new adopter's heads of, am I ready for this commitment? While welcoming a new pet into your home can come with some unexpected challenges, there are some things that should be expected before adopting. At MHS, we call this the 3-3-3 rule. The first 3 days after adopting your new pet may be scared or unsure of their new surroundings, overwhelmed, may have a little to no appetite, and likely will find a secluded space to decompress. At 3 weeks, you will notice your pet becoming more comfortable in the home, they will be building up trust with you, and you will start to see their true personality shine through. Within 3 months, your companion should be fully set in their new routine and form a strong bond with you and other members of the family. Of course, every experience is unique, but it is a handy concept to keep in mind if you are concerned about your pet's acclimating. It is also important to remember when adopting an animal that MHS does not always have any background information on the pet's previous living situation. We do the best we can to communicate the needs of an adoptable animal with a potential owner, whether that may be their ability to coexist with other pets or kids, if they have anxiety when left alone, or if they are potty trained. When an animal is surrounded by an owner, typically there will be information that can be passed along to a new owner. However, when an animal comes to MHS as a stray, identifying their true personality and behaviors can be difficult. Evaluations are completed to the best of the staff's ability for the duration of their stay at the shelter. We ask adopters to keep in mind that behaviors will likely be different in a home environment than when living in a kennel at the Humane Society. The desired outcome is always setting up you and your new pet up for success. The goal of MHS is to provide new owners with as much information, education, and tools as possible to ensure that the adopted pet has finally found their forever home. However, we understand that there will still be circumstances where an animal just isn't the right fit and will need to be returned to the shelter for their next chance of finding a family. Having an open, honest conversation about what you are looking for in a new companion helps MHS to identify the best possible fit for your home and lifestyle. Adopting a new pet is not always a walk in the park, but it sure is nice to have someone to take for a walk in the park. MHS Pet of the Week, Tanner. Tanner is a 7-month-year-old neutered male rat terrier who will definitely be the life of the party in his new home with his little goofy antics. He has previously lived with others, dogs, and we think his outgoing personality will make him a great fit for most any home ready for an active puppy. Max is a 1.5-year-old neutered male husky mix who's ready to keep you on your toes. He has playful energy and will need an active family who can keep him busy. Max is a smart blue boy who we believe will do great with his continued obedience training, and he is easily steerable. He can be selective with some of his dog friends, but generally plays well with them. Adeline is a 4-year-old spayed female lab mix who's ready to be your new adventure buddy. She is very outgoing, friendly, and playful, and she will love to join you on your daily walks. Kuma is a 5-year-old neutered male Shiba Inu. He is a strong, silent type who prefers to sit by your side and observe rather than being the center of attention. He has successfully lived with other dogs in his previous home. MHS is open weekdays from noon to 6 p.m. and Saturdays from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. You can view our adoptable pets by visiting our website at MidlandsHumaneSociety.org/adopt. 7 things you can do to help kittens. Support our local animal shelter. By Kimberly Swinger. Greetings from SOLAS and welcome to our latest editions of Cats, Cats, Kittens. Well, friends, kitten season is revving up early this year, just like my allergies. It won't be too long before SOLAS foster homes are inundated with pregnant mama cats and orphaned bottle babies. We're going to need all the help we can get to take care of everyone and get them the food, medicine, and medical procedures they need to lead happy, healthy lives as adopted fur babies. Here are 7 things everyone can do to help kitten. 1. Report strays. If there's a cat or kitten wandering around in your neighborhood, contact Animal Control by calling 712-328-4656. The women who work as an animal control officer are some of the kindest, hearted professionals in town. Rosie the Riveter has nothing on these ladies. They can handle it. Tiny little flea-infested kittens, pregnant mama cats with an attitude, sickly litters of orphans. None of these are too much for Council Bluffs animal control officers. They will carefully collect the animals and get them to people who have the tools and knowledge to care for the animals. If you do not live in Council Bluffs, call SOLAS or leave a message for us on Facebook. SOLAS stands for Support Our Local Animal Shelter, and local is not restricted to Council Bluffs. Number two, foster. Contact SOLAS or any other rescue for that matter and offer to foster. It's so easy as the commercial goes. Even a caveman could do it. You can foster one cat or kitten or an entire litter. Some SOLAS fosters specialize. We have a foster who's especially good at helping skittish, shy cats become confident, adoptable cats. Another foster home specializes in bottle feeding orphans. Another foster has a background in veterinarian care, so he is terrific with sickly cats/kittens who require specialized attention. If you have a bathroom, bedroom, or a basement that could house a kitten for a few weeks, we'd love to introduce you to the satisfying experience of fostering. Oh, and if you say you can't possibly foster because you couldn't let the cat/kitten go, please remember that the goal is goodbye, so you're ready for the next kitten who needs you, and you can't screen, then select the person who adopts the kitten you foster. Oh, and SOLAS provides all the food, litter, and medication. There is no imposed monetary obligation to the foster. Donate. Number 3, donate. SOLAS is recognized by the IRS as a 501 three tax-exempt organization. Donations to SOLAS are tax-deductible. SOLAS donations can be in kind, such as supplies or even cash if that works better for you. We make it easy. Keep reading for a list of all the ways to help. Number 4, cover expenses. Contact Valley View Vet Clinic to pay for medical expenses for SOLAS kittens and cats. Since SOLAS has no brick-and-mortar location with a vet on staff, the fosters are often advised to take cats, such kittens who need medical care, to see one of the veterinarians at Valley View. Mail checks to Valley View Vet Clinic at 15025 Valley View Drive, Council Bluffs, Iowa, 51503. Call them at 712-256-7387. 5. Get your cat neutered / spayed. There are thousands of kittens born in Pottawatomie County each year who will have short, painful lives because their mothers was not spayed by the people responsible for her. A female cat may become pregnant at 5 months old, so don't wait. A male cat will spray, get into fights, and be exposed to fetal diseases or infections if he is not neutered. Cats should be altered when they weigh 3 pounds. There are clinics available to spay and neuter at a reduced price. One of them, Animal Spay / Neuter Clinic, is located at 4970 Northwest Radel Highway in Omaha. Call the clinic at 502-553-3900. Number 6, adopt, don't shop. Any animal rescue or shelter has a selection of pets who are healthy and loving and ready to love you for the rest of their lives. Number 7, attend SOLAS fundraising events. Come to our trivia contest and silent auction on April 18th at the Omaha Firefighters Hall at 6005 Grover Street in Omaha. Are you ready to help make a difference right now? Here's all the ways to donate to SOLAS. Chewy, tinyurl.com/SOLAS list-Chewy. Amazon, tinyurl.com/SOLAS list. PayPal, paypal.me/SOLAS pet-adoption. iGive, https://www.igive.com/RCMHUVJ. Venmo, use QR code on SOLAS's website. The website is SOLASpetadoption.org. The phone is 402-577-0123. Mail is SOLASCOD.file 1112 19th Avenue, Council Bluffs, Iowa 51501. USDA penalizes 1% of puppy mills cited for violations, by Clark Kaufman. A new analysis of the federal government enforcement of an animal welfare law has found that regulators penalize only 1% of the breeders who are cited for violations. The analysis by the American Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. And that brings us to the end of today's reading of the Council Bluffs Daily Nonpareil for March 26, 2024. The Nonpareil can be heard each weekday at 5 p.m. I'm Morgan Neuhauser from Drake University in Des Moines. Thank you for sharing your time with the IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind.
From the Bureau of Economic Geology, this is EarthDate. A decade ago, there were typically 20 earthquakes a year that were large enough to feel in the central and eastern U.S. But in 2015, there were over 1,000 of them. Why? It's mostly because we're pumping more water into the ground. The boom in U.S. oil and gas production over the last decade has brought many more oil wells, which also produce water. Most is naturally occurring in the formation, and some was injected by operators to allow or improve the recovery of oil and gas. In both cases, the water will likely have picked up salt and other minerals from the rock, making it many times saltier than seawater. Operators may re-inject this water to continue to liberate oil and gas. But more often, there's too much to handle, so it's trucked or piped to disposal wells, where it's pumped down into deep saltwater reservoirs. Adding large volumes of wastewater increases the pressure in these rock formations, which can allow natural faults to slip more easily than they normally would, causing earthquakes. To address these quakes, regulators and the petroleum industry are monitoring disposal wells and shutting down those that could cause damaging seismic activity. And they now think that managing wastewater injection more carefully should help. There's still more work to be done, and university research centers, like the Bureau of Economic Geology, are conducting major studies with the aim of minimizing the risk of earthquakes while maintaining the benefits of domestic energy production. For EarthDate, I'm Scott Tinker.
EarthDate is produced by the Bureau of Economic Geology at the University of Texas at Austin, with support from Schlumberger, helping oil and gas companies increase production and efficiency while lowering environmental impact. You can hear more EarthDate stories at earthdate.org.
Are you among the millions of Americans living with chronic pain? If so, you may think prescription opioids are the solution. The truth is, the benefits of opioids are limited. Opioids only mask the pain. Opioids also come with serious side effects, ranging from nausea to withdrawal symptoms to overdose. As many as 25% of people who are prescribed opioids struggle with addiction. And those who are addicted to opioids are 40 times more likely to move on to heroin. No one wants to live in pain, but no one should put their health at risk to be pain-free. There is another choice: physical therapy. Physical therapists treat pain through movement and exercise, no warning labels required, and you get to be an active participant in your care. Choose to treat your pain safely. Choose physical therapy. Visit moveforwardpt.com to find a physical therapist near you. This public service announcement is brought to you by the American Physical Therapy Association.